Welcome to another episode of Disrupt. I'm Home Healthcare News Editor Andrew Donlin. Today, we're going to be digging into the Home Health Proposed Payment Rule for 2023. We're joined by Home Care Homebase's Chief Strategy Officer, Scott Patillo. But first, a word from Home Care Homebase. In an industry where regulations change every year, you need a software solution that helps your team plan for upcoming changes and stay compliant. Home Care Homebase provides you with the data analytics you need to understand how regulatory changes will affect your company and the resources to help prepare for the future. Visit hchb.com to learn more. In a special episode today, we're going to be diving into the methodology behind Home Care Homebase's all-encompassing comment letter to CMS regarding the proposed payment rule for home health care in 2023, which, if finalized, would decrease payments to providers significantly. Because Home Care Homebase is a central home care platform for all 10 of the largest home health providers in the nation, among many others, its data is able to paint a picture that not many others could. Patillo and I touched on access to care concerns, staffing concerns, why the cut may be even higher than expected, and much more. Okay, Scott, let's first start with this at a high level. I just would love to know how Home Care Homebase approached its comment to CMS regarding the payment rule proposal. I know there are a lot of comments this year, many more than in previous years for obvious reasons, but how did you guys specifically go about it?
Yeah, no, I appreciate that, Andrew. So each year, HHB produces a model of both the proposed rule and final rule. And what we do is we take all of the particular providers' business year to date, all their patients, all their episodes, periods, and we look at how it was reimbursed in 2021. And we compare that to how that's being reimbursed in 2022. And annually, we're in the habit of looking at that, making that available both to individual providers so they can understand the breakdown of how that impacts them, but also looking at that in aggregate. You know, we have 36% of all Medicare home health patients that are ultimately being cared for through the HHB system. And so we feel like we have a good representative data set to look at how that rule is performing in aggregate. And, you know, this year we saw, for example, you know, about a 1% difference in overall impact on the reimbursement compared to what CMS had. And so that's usually kind of the starting point. And from there, we begin talking to our various providers, the customers that we work with, and just starting to get their take on, you know, how it's impacting them, what they're seeing, what they're expecting to be the byproduct. This particular year was such a stark reimbursement cut proposed during a time that costs are rising this greatly. The conversations very quickly shifted to the access and care problems and ultimately the impact on the patient themselves. And so that led us to do a much more extensive data study than I think we've even done in past years, looking at those trends around access to care, ultimately, you know, culminated in the comment letter that we provided that I think is reflective of both what we see in the data and has a very strong basis in the data, but is also reflective of both our perspective as well as kind of the shared perspective that we form with the industry.
Okay, fantastic. And let's start with that access to care piece that you just mentioned. So there's great data from HCHB in there, in the proposed rule comment, that is, which is basically that referral conversions are declining in the home health industry. They declined from 2012 to 2019 from 79% to 69%. And that was before the public health emergency, obviously. And then since the public health emergency, they've declined 11% more. And referral conversions obviously means once a home health agency receives a referral, are they able to deliver on it? So if the proposed rule becomes final as written, Scott, or, you know, maybe it's a little bit better, but still a cut, what will that do to access to care in home health?
Yeah, so we would certainly expect that any cut at this time will worsen access to care problems across the board. You know, we were already seeing clinician shortages start at a fever pitch even before the start of the pandemic. And you kind of see that, you know, that impacting access to care, but obviously it's gotten significantly worse since then. And then, you know, combine that with the cost of the back office labor, medical supplies, gasoline, which uniquely affects home health in comparison to other venues of care. All that cost has risen dramatically over the past 2 years. And so we would expect that the overall reimbursement from CMS would need to increase to cover these costs, and instead it's going the opposite direction. And so, you know, ultimately that's straining what they can pay clinicians. It's straining their ability to compete in the labor market, and thus, you know, creating a already challenging situation for access to care and just making it worse.
And who do these rate cuts hurt the most in terms of the actual patients?
So sadly, we've historically seen access to care problems hurt the lowest income members of our society and demographics the worst. Our data analysis, we looked at 10 years of economic data saw the lower income communities more negatively affected, and ultimately the lowest demographic, where the household median income was less than $30,000 a year, had the biggest access to care challenges. Absent of some real intentional change, we would unfortunately see no reason to believe this pattern wouldn't continue.
Yeah, and another thing just to mention, Scott, I've talked to a couple of home health providers who do a lot of charity work in the places that they operate, and have told me essentially that if the rate cuts become finalized, that they'll have to pull back from some of that, just because obviously they won't have the margins that they need in order to support that kind of care moving forward.
And certainly we've heard some of the same chatter out of our agencies that we work with.
Yeah. So how are the home health results under the patient-driven groupings model that you're seeing? How are they not in line with what CMS is seeing? How does your view differ from theirs?
Yeah, well, you know, first of all, this type of analysis is challenging simply because CMS has not, you know, provided transparency with their data and calculation methodologies that they're basing their assumptions on. Right. I know the entire provider community would be, you know, very eager to work with CMS to debate, discuss these models, and ultimately help CMS understand, you know, potentially unintended consequences of some of the proposals they're making. But I would kind of share two pieces where what we have seen is not in line with what CMS is stating. You know, first of all, just that aggregate impact. You know, CMS predicted that this year's proposed rule would result in a 4.2% cut to the industry. All of our aggregate models using 36% of the data that we think is a pretty good representative sample, you know, we're seeing a 5% cut to reimbursement, which is going to create an even greater impact on access to care that we just spoke about. But the second area really is around some of these behavior adjustments that CMS modeled into their PDGM rule initially and have become an increased basis for their proposals going forward. So CMS stated that they expected providers would change their coding behaviors in a couple of different ways in order to maximize reimbursement in PDGM, both by adding more diagnosis codes to each episode and also by substantially modifying the ordering of these diagnosis codes in order to achieve higher reimbursing clinical groupings. Our data analysis shows a very different story. Modifications to higher reimbursing clinical groupings is only happening 16% of the time. And we're actually seeing a modification to lower reimbursing clinical groupings happening in 11% of cases. And so we believe this tells a story really about providers being more intentional about coding accuracy and does not support the CMS assumed coding behavior of any sort of substantial increase to the clinical groupings.
Okay, so you all believe that the cuts actually going to be greater than it's been than what providers may be expecting.
We do, and certainly that's going to make access to care even more challenging, and it's going to further strain kind of some of the knock estimates around the number of agencies that will be running at negative margin.
Okay, so this data, obviously, Scott, is really thorough, and it paints a really good picture in terms of what may be wrong with CMS's methodology. I was wondering sort of, you know, is this sort of even better evidence that home-based care agencies in general need to be keeping data on their own, whether it's to vouch for themselves in these legislative and regulatory efforts, but also, you know, if they're approaching payers like Medicare Advantage plans?
Yeah, absolutely. So data-driven arguments are always going to be powerful. You know, the data this year was obviously a major component of the response to CMS, both by us and by other members of the industry. We're also seeing it used extensively on Capitol Hill as our industry works with lawmakers to try to help them understand the negative impact to patients and put that in terms of real figures and real patients in their particular areas. You know, backing up those types of narratives with data-driven facts are always going to be more powerful. But I think, you know, there's certainly for our customers, at least, there's a lot of these behaviors that we track, that we can record, and even areas that CMS doesn't have the data on, because we sit on so much knowledge of the individual activities that are happening to care for these patients and onboard them and bring them in, things that don't show up in the claim-based data that CMS captures. But also, you know, you mentioned managed care and other payers. There is so much data in terms of what's actually happening on the ground, what we're actually paying, you know, clinicians, and how that's changing, that, you know, absent of this data, the payers are really, you know, kind of making their own assumptions and making their own narratives that can't be challenged. And so, you know, certainly the more we can provide this data, the more we can capture it, the more powerful the arguments become.
Okay. And so now moving to another aspect of one of your arguments, which was the number of patients per clinician has increased over time in the home health industry. So in the same line, what does that mean for one, quality of care? And then two, I assume that would also, you know, worsen if rate cuts were implemented ultimately.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you compare the beginning of 2019, which is obviously the last normal year we had, you know, really before the pandemic, but also even more importantly, before providers started having to adjust for PDGM and the major change that was going to be. So we go back to kind of the beginning of 2019, we're seeing on average, each clinician is responsible for 1.3 more patients over that time period, which is pretty staggering, considering these are home-based visits that require extensive in-home time, windshield time, driving to patients' homes. You know, certainly it's more challenging to deliver high quality of care when clinicians are stretched more and more thin. You know, amazingly, at least by what we can measure, we're seeing clinical quality largely holding steady in terms of hospital readmissions. But it should be noted that CMS paused a lot of its quality reporting during the pandemic. And ultimately, that reporting may tell a bit of a different story. You know, we can say the agencies have been very mission focused. They've been very intentional about deploying precious clinical resources. But it does seem like the rubber band has been stretched very thin as a risk of breaking. So, you know, ultimately, you take these existing clinician shortages, you add on all this additional costs, you reduce the reimbursement rate, you create a situation where it's just incredibly challenging to employ the amount of clinicians needed. You know, it's just getting to a point where all the innovation, all the mission-based care is just not going to be able to ultimately, you know, stretch without, you know, expecting further and further challenges to patient access.
Okay. So it seems MedPAC and perhaps CMS or their modeling at the very least would believe that, you know, home health agencies may be more well off than they are. And you've already touched on this in a few of your answers, but, you know, given staffing woes, inflation, other factors that have been headwinds historically and, you know, contemporarily for home health agencies, why is that not the case? Why, you know, our home health agencies really in a more precarious position than maybe MedPAC or CMS realizes?
Yeah, I think there is just a huge increase in the amount of costs across the board. And some of that may be obvious to CMS and MedPAC, and some of that may be hidden to some degree or kind of lagged in the data that they're looking at. And so, you know, you consider, for example, the Partnership for Quality Home Health did a study of nursing wage increases over the past 2 years. And it's showing a 14.5% compounded increase in just wages paid to nurses alone. In our comment letter, we studied the impact of the rising fuel costs and projected that providers in aggregate would spend $120 million more in fuel costs in 2022 than in 2021. And unless you understand, you know, home health specifically, I don't think people even really consider that, you know, the cost of fuel as we have to reimburse clinicians for their drive time is a really significant impact, you know, when that goes up. Obviously, the cost of supplies is going up. The cost of labor across the board is going up. So when you have the back office and front office support staffs to support all these clinicians in the field and their costs keep going up, that's just further and further straining margins. And then we look at, you know, total Medicare home health spending per beneficiary, which has declined 10% over the past decade. All this is combined to just a very challenging fiscal situation for the industry. So if you look at Knox, you know, comment letter to CMS this year, they're estimating that 51.5% of home health agencies are going to be running a negative margin in 2023. And so even aside from all the access to care challenges with shortages of clinicians, if some of these agencies close their doors, it's only going to create that, you know, a greater and greater issue there. And so ultimately, even the NOC numbers of the 51.5% of agencies running at a negative margin, that's assuming the 4.2% cut estimated by CMS. With our model showing a 5% cut, it would only make that situation worse and even more dire prediction than what NOC is showing in their letter.
Scott, what's your opinion on the advocacy efforts that have been made by the industry since the proposed rule came out? At least from my view, it seems like the data storytelling, you know, the advocacy in Washington, the relationships that are being built there with lawmakers has been, you know, a pretty good one. Is that your view? Is there anything that you think needs to be done? Or do you think that been an impressive showing from the industry at large?
Yeah, I've been very impressed. And certainly a couple of the very large scale agencies that we work with that have, you know, government affairs, you know, folks working for them and advocates that can really kind of help navigate the policymakers and folks on Capitol Hill have done a really, really tremendous job. And I think have made some very important inroads with the right people in the government to just really help them understand what's happening. And I think we've done a very effective job at telling the story and not just, you know, claiming, hey, the sky is falling because we're getting a cut, but really helping show and lay out here's kind of the cause and effect here. Here's what we're seeing. Here's what, you know, is likely to happen. And frankly, it's impacting the lowest income demographics in our society, even more than others. And I think that the set of arguments they've raised this year has really resonated. The amount of people they've been able to get in front of seems to be very impactful. And so it's hard to say exactly how this plays out. But certainly, you know, if you compare to what we were seeing and hearing from the industry, who was advocating very strongly ahead of the PDGM change in 2020, this feels more positive. It feels like more progress has been made. And I would say, you know, a much greater chance of seeing this moderated either by CMS directly or with help from folks on Capitol Hill.
Okay, Scott, is there anything else worth noting, whether in the comments or anything about the proposed rule that we haven't touched on yet?
Yeah, I think the one thing would just be the unintended consequences to Medicare as a whole, you know, the entire program. You know, home health is such a wonderful benefit in terms of patient outcome and ultimately doing it at very cost-effective ways, at lower reimbursement rates. You know, and ultimately, we believe that patients that are appropriate for home health, that get home health, that reduces their overall cost and the overall Medicare spend per beneficiary. So then when you look at these access to care problems, not only is it challenging for patient care and not allowing patients to get care in their home, we think it will ultimately drive those patients into higher acuity and more costly settings, which is going to cost Medicare on a whole. So, you know, many of us got involved in this industry because we believe in the mission of home health, we believe in the benefit, and we certainly hope CMS continues to provide a great benefit so these patients can receive wonderful care in their homes and ultimately do it in a way that's cost effective in terms of the rising medical costs for our country.
Scott, that's a great point. And it seems like a short-sighted view as opposed to a long-term thought process behind what will save Medicare money in the long run.
Absolutely. You know, and we're a big believer in you know, just the cost effectiveness of home-based care, that it is significantly more efficient to deploy a home-based nurse than for the patient to end up in a very expensive hospital stay or in a SNF stay unnecessarily. And when done correctly, it's less cost per beneficiary. It's ultimately better for the patient. That's where they want to be cared for. It's better for the patient's family and ultimately reduces the overall cost per beneficiary.
Okay, great. Well, Scott, thank you so much for the time. I appreciate you joining me today.
Absolutely. Thank you, Andrew.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Disrupt. For more news and insights on the home health, home care, and hospice industries, subscribe to our daily or weekly newsletters at homehealthcarenews.com. I'm Andrew Downland, and this has been a production of Aging Media Network, Chicago, Illinois.